We're going to have a very, very short class tonight because Randy's asked me not to break anything. And so we're going to...
Not to break any
more of his new equipment than I've already broken. So we're going to have to... like the old... in a previous congregation, when I had a conversation about needing to have a short sermon, it's just like boo on sin. Now let's all go home. So we'll just have to have a short boo on sin sermon and go home. Because I don't think I've broken anything yet. But anyway, it's Randy's fault if I break it. We are in some of the most beautiful passages of Scripture, in my opinion. And you know, anytime somebody says that, anytime I try to say I have a favorite, it's the one I just read. Because next week or tomorrow or the next hour, I'll read another one. It'll be my favorite. But I absolutely love Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And it's just so rich with meaning and rich with teaching and just rich with tools for being godly people. It's just gorgeous. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 1. And really, when we get to chapter 7 and verse 12, this passage, the very last passage we're going to get to, sums up really what's gone on through chapter 5, chapter 6. The Sermon of the Mount up to this point, Matthew 7, 12. Some of your translations say therefore, un is the Greek. And there's an old kind of a rhyme. When you see a therefore, you do what? You pay attention to what went before. When you see a therefore, you pay attention to what went before. And so, from starting at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, in chapter 5, verse 3, all the way through chapter 6, there's 34. So, we're in the 90-something verses. And then he gets to the un in 7:12. So, therefore. From what we've said so far in the Sermon on the Mount, in everything you do to, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets, or this is, some of your translations say, the law and the prophets. So, golden rule, right? Golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. There's a tradition, and it's not till I want to die on, but I won't give it as fact, but I'll give it as tradition, that a 3rd century Roman emperor named Alexander Severus was so impressed with this command as a guide for living, a Roman commander, a pagan, so impressed with this guide for living that he had it engraved in gold on his wall, and that's how it came to be known as the Golden Rule. You take that for what it's worth, but it's still a rule and it's still a guide to go by that the more you and I as God's children live by this directive, the more we will reflect God and the more we can experience a little bit of heaven right here on earth. In fact, that's what I've titled today's lesson, Heaven on Earth. The more we practice the golden rule, the more we'll experience a version of heaven here on earth. So let's just work through that a little bit. And this starts with Jesus meddling. It's not me, it's Jesus meddling. But in the first part of chapter 7, as he leads up to this golden rule, he talks about judging others. And the gist of what I get from what Jesus is saying is, you be careful how you judge others because the rule that you use with others is the rule I'm going to use for you, which is a little bit terrifying. I'm teaching God how I want him to judge me on judgment day by the way I'm judging you today. That's sobering for me. I don't know if it is for you, but it certainly is for me. So let's go to Matthew 7. With that in mind, let's go to Matthew 7. Let's read some verses, beginning in verse 1. Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. In the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye, and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take this speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. By the way, does that sound like something else Jesus has said? He's used that word before. Woe to you, you Pharisees and scribes, you hypocrites. That's not a company you want to keep. You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs or swine. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. Let's stop there. So let's talk about what practicing judgment. If Christians are going to practice judgment, what do we need to implement? What characteristics does our judgment need to include? And the first one's grace, verse 1 and 2. Now, this is a very abused and misused verse. Do not judge or you too will be judged. And it usually comes up with teenagers, and it's like, you can't tell me what's right and what's wrong. You're supposed to judge. You can't judge anything right or wrong. And I don't know, in our house, our kids would never say that, but if they ever were to say that, if they ever had said that in the past, maybe, they might have said, you can't, I want to hang out with some friends that really aren't people that I need to be hanging out with, and you can't judge whether they're the kind of people I should be hanging out with or not. That might have come up once or twice. I don't know, but I may just be making it up. Okay, I've just said that's an abused and abused passage when it says we can't pass judgment. But he just said, don't judge, you to be judged. So you help me understand that. If it's not a blanket statement, what are the parameters? Where are the edges on this? Or am I misunderstanding and we shouldn't judge anything? So you educate me. Teach me. I'm sorry?
We have to have righteous judgment.
Righteous judgment? Judging rightly?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so I've stopped too soon? Just my luck. Okay, for the same way you judge others, you too be judged. So I need to avoid being a hypocrite. But see, this is always the case. Your sins bother me a whole lot more than my sins do. My sins don't get on my nerves near as much as your sins get on my nerves. Oh, you think I'm joking? Jesus doesn't say that we don't have the right to judge between right and wrong, a righteous right to judge between right and wrong. And the reason I know that, and I'll state that as a fact, if all you have to go is verse 6. In verse 6, he commands us to make a judgment call. So we're not even a half block down from don't judge or you be judged. And he's saying, now here's where you need to make proper discernment and proper judgment. Do not give to dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs or swine, a lot of translations say. Now, don't make unfair or rash judgments, and don't hold someone else to a standard you're not willing to hold yourself to. That's me in the statement that my sins don't bother me as much as yours. But in passing judgment or making judgment on others, there's a difference between passing judgment and making judgment. Passing judgment, I'm sitting in God's judgment seat. You're a sorry person, and there's nothing redeemable about you. That's not my place. You're outside of God's will, and he's done with you. That's God's call, not my call. But to make judgments, what is good, what is right, what does it look like to cast my pearls before swine? What is that? What is that? I need to be someone who is discerning enough to. If Jesus says it, and it's not given, it's not spoken in his sermon on. This is probably a good idea, or let me offer this suggestion. It's an imperative sentence. Don't do this. Where I come from, when Jesus says something in the imperative, I believe I should take it as a command. Don't do this. Don't give dogs what is sacred. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. So we need to make judgments, but we need to make judgments in the same grace we want someone else to make judgments toward us. So when I'm getting on your last nerve, boy, wouldn't I really appreciate it if you go, he doesn't mean to be obnoxious. He's not trying to be a jerk. He's not trying to get on my nerves. I don't think that's who he is. And so I'm going to just let that one slide by. Love covers a multitude of sins. Love covers a multitude of sins because I know your heart, I know your spirit, and I know that either I heard you wrong or I took it wrong or you're having a bad day, but I know that's not your spirit, and so I'm just going to let that one slide. I want the same grace. I need to give this, extend the same grace that I want given to me. So if we're going to exercise proper judgment, righteous judgment is the great term that was used, we need a generous measure of grace. Verse 3 through 5, we need a generous measure of humility. This is the beam and the plank. A speck and a, I can't remember what it's all different. So help me understand this one. This one fascinates me, verses 3 through 5. Why do you look at the speck? Yes, sir.
Before you go to that next.
Yes, sir. Right. Yes.
I mean, there's a time, there's a time when it's indisputable.
Okay. So even if we extended all the grace we can extend, and there's a man sleeping with his father's wife, something even, it says in that passage, even the pagans don't do. You've got to dig low. Commit a sin that even the pagans won't commit, right? So this is not just a moral lapse. This is somebody who's, even the pagans look at him and go, oh man, that tisk, tisk, tisk. You know, that's bad.
In the New King James Version, verse 3 of chapter 5 there, it says, "Before you go to that next verse, Paul's word that he uses says, for I indeed, as absent in body, but present in spirit, have already.
Okay, so he's making a judgment. This is wrong. There's no way we can make this right. So now what do we do with that, Carl? So if...
Then you follow the example that he set out for them to follow.
And what was that?
And hope for the best.
What was the example?
There is that you have... what's the word that I'm trying to come up with?
I think we're on the right track.
That the church doesn't want to do now.
Discipline. Thank you, yeah. So the first thing we do is what? You go to them and talk to them. And I think, would you agree with me, that if when that happens, and shame on us for not church discipline, right? When that happens, I'll put it this way, I can state fairly emphatically that when you see something in me that you have to speak to, you just say, I know David's not always a jerk, but this one I can't let go, okay? When you see that, I would want desperately for you to come to me with all the grace you can muster. Now, I've been on your last nerve for how long? You know, I mean, if this kind of thing's going on, how much do you think Paul hated what he saw there? And he could have just, man, like, let me just verbally just smack you. He does that a little bit in Corinthians. He does that in Colossians. How much I would love it if you dug deep to find as much grace as you can find and come and let's just talk two brothers. If we can't work it out, then you go bring one or two witnesses, which is how they settle things in the Old Testament, right? Two or more witnesses. And that's what Jesus means when he says two or more people are gathered in my name, there I am with them also. It's not Jesus is absent until two of us come together. It's that if you have to make a decision, a tough one, if you've got two or more people, I'm here with you and I'll walk with you on this struggle. So I didn't listen to you. You were gracious. You were kind. You made the best point. You were right. I'm wrong. I'm just not paying attention. Then you go find a couple more and go, yeah, you know, you get Larry, because Larry goes, hey, I want him in this conversation too. Larry had his hand up. And you get Keith because he's in line of sight. And Larry and Keith come and go, David, I know Carl's spoken with you about this, and we love you, brother, but we've seen the same thing. Right? Isn't that what it says to you? And I'm still bowed up. I'm still dealing with the speck in your eye, because it's a lot easier to deal with the speck in your eye than the plank in mine. And so then what do we do after that? We go to the elders. And what do you do after that? Take it to the church. Yeah. Shame on us for not having, for us ignoring church discipline. That's not a compliment for the modern church today. Carl, we've kind of moved around. I kind of took over your conversation. I did. Did we get where you wanted to be with that?
I didn't have a conversation.
You didn't get a conversation. You just had a statement. That's the same thing Larry and Keith said. Okay, can we do it this way? We are to be people who constantly make judgments. It's not our place to sit in God's judgment seat. But we need to constantly, bad fruit corrupts good character. We need to be people who are in fruit inspectors and know what bad fruit looks like. I got to go to Larry and then I'll come here. We've got to know what bad fruit looks like, which means making judgments. See, Carl knows how to get me on a soapbox. Yes, sir. Yeah.
If we don't, then we are wrong. That's the way I look at it. And then once we do that, work it out.
So Larry's saying if we see something wrong, we need to address it. Hopefully with grace and love and patience, but we need to approach it. There was a dear lady in the church in Texas wonderful lady, but she was not a Southern demure belle. If there was a problem, she would handle it. And I remember she showed me a picture of her granddaughter. And I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And in the little lane I grew up in, being a hippie meant growing your hair long and having bell-bottom sleeves. It wasn't drug and illicit sex. It wasn't any of that kind of stuff. It was just long hair to make your parents mad and bell-bottom sleeves because that was kind of cool. And so she showed me a picture of her granddaughter, and her granddaughter's name was like something like Creation. Oh, come on, that's a hippie name. I mean, give me a break. And I said, oh, she, and her blonde hair, straight hair parted down the middle. I mean, I could have gone to high school with her, right? And I said, well, she's a beautiful young lady. I said, she looks like a hippie. Well, to this grandmother, hippie was a totally derogatory term. It was somebody who was very derogatory. And what I love about this lady was, I made her mad. She made a judgment. You have insulted my beautiful granddaughter, which was never my intention, but I made her mad. And she just called me up and said, David, I need to talk to you. And I said, okay. Never called me. She never called me before, never called me after. And called me at the house and said, David, I need to talk to you. And she goes, you hurt my feelings. I couldn't love that woman more in that moment than I ever had my whole life. We had a problem. And she came to me and she said, we need to talk about this. And I tried to explain as best I could. And I don't know if it made any sense or not. I mean, if she has an ingrained view of what hippie is, me saying I have a different view, I don't know if it made any sense, but I apologized to her. But I love that woman. And this has been forever ago, and I've forgotten a lot of things since then, but I haven't forgotten her and what she's done. And that she came to me and said, we need to talk. And she had a problem, and she came, and she wasn't mean or she was hurt that I had besmirched her granddaughter. And so, is that where we're going? Are we on the same page? Okay. Have I talked so long you forgot what you're going to say? Yes, a pattern. And so the example that Carl brought up, that was in that day and time, that was a total affront usurping the father. I am now claiming head of this household by taking one of his wives, and it was as much an affront as the prodigal son saying, you're worth more to me dead than you are alive. It was just that insulting. So it's not. So it's a high bar. Now let's take that. Anybody else? Anybody else? I'll take a.
I don't think objective truth gives an exception to this, and one of the things that we're talking around, but I think we need to address more directly, is the measure. You had a cup up there, a measuring cup up a slide ago, and to me that's critical to this whole enterprise. It cannot be. Compared to me, and I'm addressing it because you need to be more like me. That's human. We do that. We do that even.
That's the beam and plank.
We swear that we're not. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You need to behave like I behave and stop this. You're doing things I want to do. The measure is not me or you or any of us. It's Christ for us now.
Yes.
And if we understand what the standard is, there's no need to judge that scoundrel, to Carl's point, absolute scoundrel, rascal, bad, just bad behavior, and it appears that everybody knew it.
Yeah.
The personal judgment or the calling out, these are still the correct forms to go through, though. And I think it can be done a little bit gracefully, like in your example, when you were being challenged by somebody, as the malefactor or the sinner, you need to know, you need to have your sin. You got to give it to someone, right? Don't give me a 20-minute explanation. What did I do that upset you?
Yeah.
And I've had members of our church pull me aside and say, you did something wrong and really hurt my feelings. And my reaction probably wasn't as good as yours, as quick as yours, but my long-term reaction is thank you.
That's an act of love, because it's not easy to go to someone you have a problem with unless you're just so mad you're ready to pick a fight. But if you're coming at it from a Christian perspective, it's not easy because you don't want to hurt or damage or...
But if you think that you have the ability to judge using the standard that isn't Christ just because the other person is obviously wrong and you have facts, you're absolutely wrong. You still need to approach it from a standpoint of humbleness. And you need to, if you have some idea of your own righteousness or perfection, you need to leave that at home when you have this conversation.
Well, and that's where we're, if I understand you, Devin, correctly, that's the beam and the plank.
Yeah. No, and that's why that's included right
in yeah.
the end.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because the log in my eye is theoretically closer to my optic nerve and objectively bigger, using the original use of the word objective optically, and yet I am seeing that little...
I can look past all that to see the problem you've got.
Yeah. Sliver, 25, 22 feet away.
It's infinitely easier for me to ignore my problems and focus on yours, because it's easier to grapple about you than change me.
And how much time do I spend looking at myself in truth?
In truth. How much time do I spend looking at myself in truth?
And some of us, though, are not introspective. Can I say that? Do you all know what I'm talking about?
Who was it? Socrates? The unexamined life isn't worth living?
Yeah.
Is that Socrates?
Not a Christian.
So many people smarter than me.
But some of us have a real hard time looking at ourselves. And I'm one of those. I think it is truly easier for me to see that other stuff. To the point where I could maintain lists of people and the sins that they do.
You don't.
And that cannot be my righteousness.
Yeah.
And that's what this passage is. You're gonna get in a lot of trouble doing that. Because human nature is all sin in the judgment seat, not let me reconcile you to the measure or the standard. And I think that might be the difference here, is that we have a standard we reconcile to. And it isn't another church member who's slightly more perfect today.
Today.
Christ, Christ Jesus.
Yeah.
And we're both that person who's sleeping with his mother-in-law.
His father's wife. His father's wife, which is probably a concubine or a second.
He's sinning. I think we all agree to that. But did the person who let them know about that, were they without sin or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is one sin greater than the other? You know the answer to that, you're a Christian. So that's what I think that we're trying to be explained here. It's to some extent the way you approach it. And that's the reason I think our example of church discipline has so many stages.
I don't think it's to some extent. I think it's to a great extent how you approach it. I think that's what the whole beam and plank is.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
If you forget that you have a beam in your eye, you're going to come across like just a monster. And everyone will know you're a monster.
So let's do that. Thank you, Devin. Let's do this. Beam and plank. We're going to use that language because that's what we've got here. All right, okay, we got a speck. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay attention to the plank in your own eye? So speck and plank, small and large. Is that saying that my sins are greater than your sins? I'm the plank and you're the speck. Is that what he's saying? I've got more problems than you have, but rather than deal with my problems, I'm going to deal with what few problems you've got. Well, help me understand the relation between the large and the small. The big old giant beam sticking out of this smug guy's eye versus the little speck you've got that is hard to see in your eye. What the truth is, we need to pay probably more attention to ourselves, being introspective and self-aware, and where we need to make movements to be more like Christ than focusing on why somebody else isn't. But help me the proportion difference. Why the different proportion, a speck versus a beam? What are we supposed to get from that? Do the kids just say, why deal with the speck in their eye when you don't do the speck in your eye? Yeah.
And what you've got going on is so much more, like, needs to be taken care of more than the spec person. Or at least there's a lot more going on there.
So it's a matter of offense.
Yeah.
It's a greater offense to ignore my problems and deal with yours. Yeah, there you go. All right, perfect. One finger pointing at you and three fingers pointing back at me. And I'm repeating some of this for folks who are listening at home because we've had some long conversations. I'm trying to keep them in the loop because it's kind of hard sometimes. So if it's like he just said that, that's what we're doing.
Possibly wrong, but I'm getting that the
we'll tell you if you're wrong, Stephen.
The plank is pride.
Okay.
I think is the root of, if not all sins, most of them. And it's a proud person who's looking past his pride saying, look at how good I am. Oh, you messed up on a little sin, and it's your pride that's causing, I think, all this judgment. I don't think it's wrong to judge. A lot of this is making me think of the reason why you do all those steps. Approach a brother who's in sin. Then take him with the witness. Then go to the elder. What's the reason we do that? Is it to make sure we have a really sanctified church and we're elitist and no one wrong is here? You've got to kick out sinners? What's the reason? It's to save that soul.
Yeah.
So if the reason you're coming to someone is in humility to say, hey, I saw you messed up.
It's redemptive.
I want you to keep me accountable too. That's not wrong. That's me looking at my plank. I got a plank here and you got a plank. Why don't we keep each other accountable? Because the reason I'm bringing you before eldership isn't to make sure we don't have anyone who's got a worse sin than me.
I'm not trying to ruin you.
We can come to church and smile and say, I'm doing great. Even when we were yelling at our kid, I'm explaining your experience now. Yelling at our kid on the way, slapping him. I'm probably just explaining y'all's experience on a Sunday morning, not mine. Then we walk in the door like, hey, I'm great, everything's perfect. And we pretend church. You know, the reason isn't to make sure we don't have any sinners in church. It's the reason we want to approach someone and judge when they're wrong is to save their soul.
So
you're coming at it from pride of, well, I have some, but I'm so good, I need to call you out because then it makes me feel good. That's the pride showing. Maybe that's wrong.
So if we go back to Carl's example, the conclusion was cast him out. Now, was that, let's get rid of the guy that, I remember one time a guy said, the church will get better when a few of our members pass away. Yes, I've heard that more than once. The goal was not to cast him out, wasn't let's get rid of this guy because we can all be comfortable and happy. The goal was, let them experience what life is like outside the flock, outside the herd, vulnerable,
and the reason you
alone.
It's
redemptive. It's redemptive.
It's not just to get rid of a member. It's, hey, I want to come to you. You're doing this. Don't do it.
So he was,
Let me bring Josh to you. Oh, now I get an elder involved. We're coming to you because we care about your eternal soul. It's kind of like the world thinks the person who loves you is the one who says, do whatever you want. I don't want to tell you about Jesus. Go pardon this. goes, stop!
Yeah.
There's a cliff.
Woke up everybody. Just remember my pacemaker next time you do that, okay? Yeah, no, it's fine. I think.
Do you think people know if you're coming to them in love or if you're coming to them in judgment?
And that's right.
Do you think they can immediately discern the difference?
The measure of grace is where the way in which you approach them is that, hey, I'm doing this because I care about you, not because I think I'm better. By the way, you don't need to tell me your specific sins. I have plenty of my own.
Right.
But we want you to turn to Christ in the sanctification process. Why we're approaching you, not to show that I'm personally better than you.
All of that has to be done. If it's done righteously, it's done with an eye toward redemption. It's a redemptive quality. Let's restore, not just proves how bad somebody is. And I kind of think with the different beam and the plank, they could both have the same problems. But if I'm going to ignore mine to focus on yours, that automatically magnifies mine and makes it greater. Now, did you have a word? Yes.
And so if I had something in my eye, I wouldn't want someone who was blinded in some way.
Yes.
Taking it out. And I think from the perspective of the person with the speck, they're not going to hear it if the person with the beam is coming to
them. Comes with that spirit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love the way you guys just teach the class, and I'll just have to sit here and just kind of point and grunt. That's awesome. The whole point is redemptive. The whole idea is that we need to be people who make righteous judgments. But the whole idea is, I think the point here is, we're teaching God how we want him to treat us. So when I come saying I'm right and you're wrong, on judgment day when God looks at me, does he have the right to say I'm right and you're wrong? I'm right, you're wrong, and I can't argue with that. And if I've not practiced grace in my life with others who are in the wrong or who I believe in the wrong, I ought not expect God to practice grace with me in judgment day. It's a scary thought to think I'm teaching God how to judge me at judgment day. We've got to be people who make righteous judgments. We don't cast our pearl before swine, and we'll get there. But if I am the guy with the plank in my eye, then I would need somebody to come to me and say, I love you very much, but you're creating for yourself a very difficult judgment day. Because God's going to take notes from you and he's going to treat you the way you're treating others. Yes, there's some horrible things that are going on that need to be called out. Most of what we deal with in the church are imperfect people trying to get along with other imperfect people in an imperfect world, in an imperfect church. And what's fascinating to me is God, when you look at the original 12, he put some people together that just had to have driven each other nuts. And he said, now, we're going to work this out and we're going to make it work together. And I believe the 12 are better as a 12 than any one of them as a singular, because learning to work with each other is part of what grew them into the disciples they are and the apostles they were and what we remember them to be. Us coming together and kind of rubbing each other the wrong way and working through it and working through the friction. And yes, I've made mistakes. I've said things. I've sinned. I've been catty. I've been tacky. Graciously loving me and trying to work with me and how to help me through it raises the bar for all of us. And Jesus told his disciples, the church will know that the Father sent me by your unity. Any group can get together and argue and haggle with each other. When the group comes together and loves despite challenges, makes judgment but doesn't get judgy, doesn't get judgmental, then all creation pays attention. Well, thank you all for a wonderful class. Thank you for some great conversation. God bless you. We are dismissed for the evening.